from KHOL, this is Jackson Unpacked, our podcast on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. I'm your host, Hannah Merzbach. Coming up on today's show, an immigrant resource center recently opened in Jackson, specifically to help people from one Mexican state.
I feel so proud to be from Tlaxcala, but also I am feeling so proud to be Jackson citizen.
And later, we hear from local professional skier Veronica Paulson on her new series of short films, giving an inside look into what it takes to be a mountain athlete.
We don't always see all the work and the hours that go into each accomplishment, so I really wanted to be able to showcase that to people all around the world.
These stories and more coming up on Jackson Unpacked. Shed antler hunting season opened in Wyoming on May 1st. Hunters typically come to Jackson from all over to search for the antlers, which elk shed around this time. But this year, only Wyoming residents can participate for the first week because of a new state law. Though even with fewer people, competition was still fierce. KHOL's Dante Filippola-Ankeny tags along with hunters near the National Elk Refuge.
The sun has yet to rise, and over 100 cars, trucks, and trailers sit idling in the county fairgrounds parking lot and down the neighboring street. Hunters are drinking coffee and some saddling horses. Then, 20 minutes before the 6 a.m. start of the annual shed hunt, flashing police lights lead the motorcade out of town toward the elk refuge. Brady Rivenez and his 5 shed hunting passengers are 23rd in line. As he drives, his black truck's headlights glance off herds of elk. The 24-year-old from Gillette says the rush, or the chaos, as he puts it, is hard to explain.
Especially since it's over something stupid like elk horns.
But this is Ravenna's 5th year driving the 6.5 hours from Gillette for the shed hunt, and he knows where he's heading. He quickly hangs a right, leaving the motorcade, peels down a gravel road, veers over the edge of it, and lurches into park beneath looming canyon walls just outside of the refuge boundaries. The group leaps out of the truck, swings packs over their shoulders, and breaks into a sprint alongside other hunters, like the start of an Easter egg hunt for grown men clad in camo.
It's exhausting. This is the definition of type 2 fun.
The annual shed hunt in Jackson usually draws hundreds of vehicles from around the country. But with the new state law, out-of-state residents now have to wait a week to hunt. The legislation was largely spurred by Wyoming shed hunters who felt they'd been pushed out by swarms of hunters in recent years as the sport has grown in popularity. This year, Game and Fish's Brad Hovengay says the legislation cut the number of registrations in half.
And quite honestly, it was about as low-key as a antler collection opener as we've seen here in years.
In years past, Game and Fish has found hunters trying to get an advantage by sneaking out early, which is illegal. But this year, law enforcement didn't cite anyone. And Hovengay says they checked license sporadically and didn't find anyone violating the new law. But he says the department has heard from many non-residents who felt the law making them wait is unfair.
Non-residents this show may have to hunt quite a bit harder than they have experienced in the past when they were allowed to start on the 1st of May.
Jace Romrell from Star Valley says he's a fan of the law.
It's more special this year because we can actually benefit from being, you know, Wyoming residents, and it makes me feel proud to be able to come pick up the antlers that you watch all winter long and you see on the refuge, you know.
Sitting atop his horse with antlers slung to its side, he says this year is also special since his sons are joining him for the first time.
My goal was to get the twins, my two boys, an antler, and they both succeeded in that. So I just wanted to put a smile on their face and make them enjoy the outdoors just as much as I do. And we were able to get up there and get the antlers that we were after, so.
He says he's been shed hunting in Jackson for about 10 years.
We enjoy looking at them. We enjoy using them in home decor, and They're special to us because it's a Western living style.
Brady Rivenez, the 24-year-old from Gillette, says he has mixed feelings about the new law.
Yeah, I kind of go both ways. It's cool being able to see all the Wyoming guys get first pick on horns, but also kind of bittersweet because you don't get to see all your buddies you've made over the years from coming to this.
Back on the mountain, Rivenez runs up a rocky cliff to a ridgeline that plateaus. The sunrise casts a pink glow above the Tetons and glistens off the thin snow crust.
It's gonna be a little hard to see with the snow.
Moving fast, with no plans of stopping, he knows other hunters are right behind him. He's looking for pockets or clusters of many antlers.
Some years you find it, some years you don't. But either way, we're not stopping.
Then his pace quickens and he yells as he spots one, then two. He scrambles to their side, throws off his pack, straps them in, and with no time to celebrate, keeps moving, unsatisfied.
Not good enough. For where we went through to only have two, it's surprising.
By the end of the day, he'll have added two more, and his friends, who all spread out, found another four.
Not too shabby.
He's had better years, but ultimately it's not just the thrill, the sheds, or the scenery that keeps him coming back.
A lot of it's the people. We like to shed hunt. There's sheds on this hill. Everyone else gets to come together that likes to shed hunt. You get to see all those guys pick up horns. It's just a good time in general.
Rivenez returns to his truck and throws down his sheds, considering their size and debriefing the day cordially with other returning hunters. The competition is now over. Then he grabs a quick lunch in town and hits the road back towards Gillette, all before noon. Dante Fopola Inkney, KHOL News.
You're listening to Jackson Unpacked. In late April, Mexican government officials opened an immigrant resource center in Jackson, specifically to help people from Tlaxcala. About 30% of Teton County's population is estimated to be Latino, and many of them come from this small Mexican state. As I report, the new office gives residents ways to connect to their roots. Paula Zabalsa from the Mexican Immigrant Assistance Department leads the opening ceremony for the office, called Casa Tlaxcala.
Casa Tlaxcala es la casa de todos. Gracias.
The resource center is everyone's house, she says to a small crowd at the co-working space where it's located. But it's specifically aimed at supporting the about 1,000 Jackson families with roots in Tlaxcala by offering immigration help and reuniting families.
The governor of Tlaxcala, Lorena Cuellar, wants them to feel like they have the government of Tlaxcala near to them.
The region is home to one of the largest Tlaxcaltecan populations in the country, second only to New York and California, where the two other offices of this kind are located. Over the last few decades, people moved to the resort community in the Tetons after word spread in small Mexican towns that there's lots of job opportunities here, and it's a good place to raise a family.
I think that they feel at home. Yes, I think they do.
It's home, but life could be easier. Many people work two to three jobs to afford the high cost of living, and it's often too expensive for many to visit family members back home. Or, depending on their immigration status, there's often a risk of not being let back into the U.S. Until now, the closest place to get documents needed for the immigration process was in Salt Lake City.
4 hours away from here. Winter season is kind of hard because of the driving, the snow.
That's Marcela Badillo, who moved from Tlaxcala over 20 years ago. In honor of the office opening, Badillo is dressed in a pink floral Mexican blouse and a beaded necklace and earrings she said she bought in Tlaxcala. She says she just recently became a citizen, which required countless hours of driving to Utah to get documents like birth certificates. Once she became a citizen, she was finally able to travel back to Mexico.
To show to your family, to your kids, oh, I come from this, and show them your old house. It's amazing.
Now, Badillo says she hopes having the office in Jackson will speed up the immigration process for others and help them stay connected to their homeland.
it's huge. I feel so proud to be from Tlaxcala, but also I am feeling so proud to be Jackson citizen.
For families who can't go to Mexico, the Immigrant Assistance Office has created a program called Uniendo Historias, or Uniting Stories. It helps bring seniors from Mexico to their relatives in Jackson. The same week the office opened, 10 seniors reunited with their families at a Catholic church in town. Families cluster together, hugging and crying. One of them, Fran Perez, picks up a bag holding about a pound of soil and hands it to her young great-grandson, who she's meeting for the first time. The family says these are the roots of his land in Tlaxcala. The visiting seniors gathered the soil from the highest peak in the central Mexican state. It's been 19 years since the family has been together. And Perez, who's nearing 80, says she wasn't sure she'd live to see the day. Her daughter, Susana Saldana, moved to the area over 2 decades ago for job opportunities and to give her sons a better life.
I have too much emotion, anxiety, so happiness. I don't know how to express my feelings.
Thanks to the program from the Mexican government, their family now has a month together. And soon, more residents could have that opportunity, like Marcelino Vasquez.
I haven't had a chance to meet my mom for the last 20 years.
Vasquez, who's wearing a flat bill cap and has a thick black mustache, says he didn't know about this program until recently.
We want to meet our family, you know, like, but sometimes it's impossible. But they are making now the way easy to meet our families.
Vasquez says he plans to talk to the office to figure out if he can also bring his mom to Jackson. Hannah Merzbach, KHOL News. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Jackson Unpacked from KHOL, where we showcase reporting and interviews on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. New episodes of Jackson Unpacked drop every other Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Jackson Unpacked is generously sponsored by the Snake River Sporting Club. At nearly 1,000 acres, this private Western community accesses the Snake River and Bridger-Teton National Forest. Not to mention a golf course, equestrian center, and fully functioning ranch. More information about excursions, amenities, and lifestyle at snakeriversportingclub.com.
You're listening to the sounds of Tlanesi, a Mexican folk dance group. The performers recently traveled to Jackson to dance at the Center for the Arts as part of the Tlaxcala Cultural Celebration. They came from Hueyotlipan, a town in Tlaxcala and Jackson's new sister city. There were also performances from Weiwei dancers and showings of photos, paintings, and films from that region. The event was years in the making and one of the Center for the Arts' most highly attended events. A melting pot of cultures with every seat in the theater filled and hundreds tuning in from Mexico. A full video of the event is available on the center's website. Thanks for tuning in to KHOL. I'm Hannah Merzbach. Workers in Jackson Hole face unique challenges to power the community. Servers, educators, nurses, home builders, and more often have to deal with the high cost of living, learning new languages, and for some, long commutes over a mountain pass. In a new series of radio diaries from KHOL, we get to know more about some of the folks that help our community thrive and what drives them to stay here. Today, we go to the local nonprofit, the Teton Raptor Center in Wilson. we hear from Anna Tobin, who cares for the center's resident raptors. She also trains them for educational programs, which teach the community how to protect the birds of prey in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. But first, Tobin gives us a look inside her daily commute from Victor, Idaho, a cheaper alternative to living close to work in Jackson.
My name is Anna, and I am starting my drive to Teton Raptor Center. So every day, 5 days a week, I commute over the pass. It's a blessing and a curse. In the mornings, when I have to leave an hour early, it does feel a little bit like a curse just because it does take so long. It takes a lot of gas, which adds up. And depending on the weather or the traffic, it can be a little bit dangerous. But on the best days, my drive in the pass is usually my time to plan for the day. So I know today we are getting a bird out. It is time for the annual West Nile vaccine. So we're going to be getting him in hand. We're going to be trimming his talons and his beak.
Okay, now I'm going to bring in a barn owl. He's very loud. Hey, handsome dude. Come on over. So we come in every morning. We do this morning care, and then we are training. Every bird gets trained every single day. We're prepping their diets. We're cleaning their enclosures. We're coordinating with other staff and volunteers. We're doing programs. Usually we typically have anywhere from 1 to 2 and sometimes even 3 programs a day. And so the day is just always changing, but what is consistent is that bird care needs to happen every single day. I love training people and I love training animals. It's like creating a common language and telling a story. So raptors' body language is unlike any other animal. I've worked with a wide variety. I've worked with wolves. I've worked with foxes and porcupines, aardvark, just a lot of different stuff. And raptors are just kind of their own sphere. And for just background, all of these birds have a reason why they can't return into the wild, whether it's an injury or they were raised for education or they are too comfortable around people. Being a raptor in an education program is like if we were surrounded by bears. It's very against their nature. It can be potentially very stressful. And so the training we do is choice-based training. All of their gear is completely removable, so they actually have to choose to step onto our glove to put their gear on to go off-site and do these different things. And so we develop a trust-based relationship with these guys. They don't like us. They don't have the ability to like us, but they can trust that we're reliable food sources. We keep them safe. And then we can ensure that they have a really high quality of life through that process. If a bird doesn't trust us, if they don't want a program, we won't force them to. I knew I wanted to work with wildlife, but because I didn't have a traditional science background, it was almost impossible to be able to get into it. And so I kind of just finagled my way in through education. Grad school helped for sure. Actually, a lot of people in our industry don't have grad degrees. I also became a certified professional bird trainer, and there's only about 200 of us with that certification in the world. It's a big job in an industry for burnout. You have to do 365 days of care. You don't really get holidays. You don't get normal days off. And so it can be a high burnout industry because you're also trying to convince the world that not only does the greater conservation matter, but also the individual welfare of the animals. And so welfare for raptors is still fairly new, how we discuss it, how we interpret it. And so trying to balance the need for like doing education programs with also creating really high welfare, that can cause a lot of stress and fatigue over time. One thing I'd love the public to know is that we're here. So we would love people to come and visit and see us, and we'll continue doing outreach to the community. But the other thing I want people to know is like living with wildlife just takes some small adjustments. And every single person has the ability to make a difference to conserve raptors, whether it's not throwing their trash out of their cars to prevent car collision, slowing down, putting stickers on their windows. Like, it doesn't have to be rocket science to create conservation messaging. We can, as a public, as a society, we can live our lives in a way that respects their wildness as well. That just takes some small adjustments.
This radio diary was produced by KHOL contributor Kieran Hadley. It's part of our series talking to Jackson workers about what drives them to stay in the region and the challenges they face living here. If you're interested in sharing your story, drop us a note at news@jhcr.org. Local professional skier Veronica Paulson is well known as the first woman to land a backflip into Corbett's Couloir at Jackson Hole Mountain Resort. She's also a filmmaker and has created a series of short films highlighting other Jackson area athletes in the mountains. KHOL film critic Jeff Counts sat down with Paulson to talk about the ongoing project.
Veronica Paulson, welcome to On Set.
Thanks for having me.
So your series of short films, in your own words, pulls back the curtain on what it's like to be a pro skier these days and provides a behind-the-scenes look into the lives of local athletes. How did this project start and what are your goals for it?
Yeah, I started this project a couple years ago after working with TGR. I really wanted to try my own hand at being in creative control. And living here for 9 years now, going on 10, we see a lot of the accomplishments of what our fellow athletes in this town are doing, which is some really impressive stuff in the mountains, but we don't always see all the work and the hours that go into each accomplishment. So I really wanted to be able to showcase that to people all around the world.
I think the films are kind of like the Huck version of comedians in cars getting coffee. You're on camera yourself with your subjects, you're talking shop, you're experiencing things together. It works really well. Why did you choose to go in that direction over straight documentary style?
Wow. Well, I so appreciate that because I love comedians in cars getting coffee. But yeah, I thought I might have a unique perspective to interview these other athletes since I'm an athlete myself. So I thought we could really dive into the nitty gritty.
You know, adventure sports filmmaking requires a lot of tough location shooting. You've had other people film you forever in your career. But what have you learned now about what it takes to make great tape in remote places?
Oh, man, it takes so many little things to line up for that perfect shot. Not only do the athletes have to be on their A game, but so do the filmers. All the equipment has to be working, the weather, the snow safety. And so when all of these aspects come together and line up, it's really magical.
Safety is a big issue. What have you learned about having to set things up for the athletes and yourself to make sure that everyone's okay at the end?
Yeah, we take safety really seriously. And I particularly in my career, every year I try to take some more courses and get more and more knowledgeable about snow safety. We try to, every time we're out on set, we have one person whose only job is to keep people safe. So as athletes, we can get caught up in wanting to showcase our skills and go big, but having that one person who can dial you back a bit and tell you whether something's a green light or a red light, that has done a lot of help for keeping us safe.
Now that the project is well underway, I think you're five films in or something like that. Are your friends in the pro skier community starting to approach you with ideas for future films? I suspect there's no shortage of topics, no shortage of new lines to explore.
Yeah, they have been. I've been really lucky that I have a lot of close friends that are pro athletes, and I'm always really excited to hear their ideas. And hopefully we'll get to all of them one by one.
How many do you think you'll do? Is there an end in sight?
I'd love to keep doing them forever. I think it's so expandable. I can do all different types of mountain sports. I think there's kind of a limit each winter. Doing about four or five is kind of our limit, just with editing and filming and how much time it takes. But yeah, I would love to keep doing this for years.
Well, talk about the most recent film that you did with Madison.
Yeah, Madison has been a friend of mine for a while, and she specializes in kind of a different type of professional skiing. She's really focused on her endurance abilities and mountaineering, which was something that I really wanted to try myself. That's one of the best things about this series, that I get to just pick things that I want to learn and can kind of put a film together about it. And she was just such a blast the whole time. She was so encouraging and helping me with my goals. And we just had so much fun that day. And I'm glad it came through on the film.
Can you give us a sneak peek about some of the future topics you're exploring now, not only as a skier, but as a filmmaker?
Yeah, I'm hoping this summer to get into a bit of trail running. Endurance has always been a weak spot for me, so I'm trying to work on that and hoping to put together a trip down to Argentina, and we'll see if it happens.
I've seen all the films, but tell our listeners where they can find your stuff and learn more about this project.
You can find the project on YouTube. It's on my channel at Veronica Paulson, and that's S-E-N at the end of Paulson. And you can find all the films there. On Instagram, you can find me at Veronica Bell as well, B-E-L-L-E.
Veronica, thank you so much for joining me today on set.
Thanks for having me.
That was K2L film critic Jeff Counts talking to local professional skier Veronica Paulson about her series of short films featuring local athletes. That's it today on Jackson Unpacked. Original music for the show is performed by the local band Strumbucket. I'm Hannah Merzbach, and this is K2L Jackson Unpacked.